How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Special edition Locked On Jazz podcast. The Jazz acquired Ricky Rubio today using the cap money that they had available that expired at 10 o'clock tonight, and they were able to acquire a point guard. They now have a point guard for when they meet with Gordon Hayward on Monday, and they got the 26-year-old Spaniard Ricky Rubio from the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'll get into some of the aspects of why this is a good deal for the Jazz, just kind of off the court, but let's learn about Ricky Rubio on the court from the guy who's called all of his NBA games. I think that's right. Every single, I think that's right, of his NBA games.
Yeah.
Alan Horton, you will have no more Ricky Rubio for your fun. Tell us what the Jazz got.
Yeah, you got a guy. You're right. I haven't missed a single Ricky Rubio game. And I tell you what, when he came here, I still remember when he came here in 2011. We had drafted him a couple of years earlier. David Kahn had obviously done that. And, you know, we waited the time for him to show up, and it was that lockout shortened season. So it was 2011, only had one preseason game, but that game was a sellout. It was packed. There was such a – he was just – everybody wanted to see Ricky Rubio play. And I tell you what, David, that rookie year, he didn't disappoint. I mean, it was just electrifying play after electrifying play. And when he went down with the ACL injury late in that season against the Lakers and Kobe Bryant – late in a game at Target Center. The Timberwolves were about a game or two games out of the playoffs at that spot. And I look back on that time, I really thought that he was going to carry that team to the postseason. And obviously the injury threw everything for a loop. And it's one of two major injuries he's had. So he's missed a big chunk of time with that. First, that one ACL, half of his rookie year, then half of the next season. And then a couple of years ago with that ankle injury that he had to have surgery on, he only played 22 games. But, you know, I think everybody has – it's been amazing to see how the fans have looked at Ricky since he's been here, from hero and godlike figure to, okay, a little bit of frustration, and now everybody's starting to realize 3 or 4 years in that the shooting numbers have not improved. And then the trade rumors have been, you know, swirling here for about 2.5 years now. Every draft day, every trade deadline, his name gets mentioned. And it's almost gotten to the point where I think people were just like, boy, if you're going to trade him already. People started to feel sorry for Ricky. And I think that shooting thing is obviously an issue, but I think it has gotten too much attention versus what else he does. Like his work ethic and his attitude and his team first mentality, his ability to see the floor, his defensive acumen, his reach is longer than people think. I mean, he does so many things. He makes you better on the floor, and the numbers prove that during his time. And unfortunately, you know, in this day and age, at the point guard spot, you need to be able to shoot, you need to be able to score, and that's really not his strength. So, you know, it's sad to see him go, because I think I still think he's a tremendous player. And I'll take 100 guys with his kind of work ethic and team-first mentality.
Let's go to the shooting. He had this kind of blip at the end of the year last year. He torched the Jazz, actually, in one of those games. Was that just a small sample size, or do you think there's something that may have been on the road to improvement for him?
Well, everybody likes to point to the second half of last season. Post-All-Star break, it was, 16 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds. Only Russell Westbrook and James Harden averaged at least that, although those guys are in a different category as far as their scoring goes. But really, when you look at it, it was just the month of March, and it was a record month for him. 18 points, 10 assists. He shot 47% and 44% from deep. But then, you know, even though April's a small sample size, he shot 32% in April. I mean, he finished up 3 of 20 from beyond the arc. So it's really – it was a hot month, and it was almost – I mean, when you look back on it now, it was almost the case where – I don't know if they told him or he just decided, he and his agent, hey, we need to boost my stock a little bit, because he was taking shots that he normally wouldn't. But he knocked him down, which is a good thing. But it really was just 1 month worth of games. The shooting has just never improved, David. And I think a couple of things go into that. The two injuries he had really knocked two off seasons for him, the ankle injury, the ACL. And then when he plays for his Spanish national team, I think that occupies most of his summer. And, you know, if you're going to remake your shot or tweak your shot, you know, you talk to shooting coaches, what do they need? They need time and they need repetition. And they need to get you in the gym every single day for a couple of months, sometimes two, sometimes three, you know, as much as possible to kind of remake that shot. And he's never had that time to dedicate to his shooting. And it's been a struggle. He struggles at the rim. He's never developed that kind of floater shot from 3 to 10 feet. His mid-range game has not been strong. And, of course, his three-point shooting has been, he shot 31% or 30% this year, right around there. And it's just it's never come along in six seasons. And I think when you look back at it, injuries or not, or national team or not, you've got to find a way to get better in this game. If you're going to be a good or great player, that's what those guys do. They get better every single year.
The numbers that jump out to me are the rim numbers. The three-point shooting's not great, but if you kind of dig into it, it's actually the numbers actually get a little better. But the rim numbers, I mean, 2 years ago, he only played 22 games. He shot 33% at the rim. He's below 50% at the rim. What is that?
You know, when I think back of him driving to the basket, it's always in like fifth gear. He's going full speed at the rim. He has never really developed that change of gears where you see the good drivers be able to kind of check their speed up a little bit. So A, that they can finish, but B, also maybe draw some contact from that defender coming down your back. He always seems to be going a million miles an hour, and the ball just goes too hard off the glass. And that's something that's never changed. And I think that has been frustrating to see.
And the weirdest one is how good his free throw shooting is, because that just doesn't match in any way at all.
It's unbelievable. He was tremendous this year from the free throw line. I mean, I know where he finished up ranked in the top. He must have been right in the top 10 somewhere, because it's about a 90-91%.
You probably have these numbers. The thing that jumps out on him, though, that has made people like him, like myself, for so long, is you have just always been better when he's on the floor, despite really historically bad shooting. Like, there just are not a lot of guys in the history of the NBA that after 6 years are 38% from the field and 32% from three. Why is that, that you guys have always been better when he's on the floor?
Yeah, I think that probably the numbers this year didn't bear that out. He's probably a minus, but that was the first time in his career. And he just inspires confidence in his teammates. I think he gets them in the ball. He gets them the ball where they can be most effective. I mean, it's one thing to pass the guy a ball, but it's another thing to put it in his spot where he wants it so he can shoot. He's just such a team first guy. I remember when he first came here, you know, I started to talk a little soccer with him because I follow international soccer, and I'm obviously a big fan of the way Barcelona plays the game with the passing and the way they see the field. He does the same thing on the basketball court, and he's such a team first guy. And I remember talking to him also about the Spanish national team. He loves playing for the national team. Whenever we play a Pau Gasol team, a Marc Gasol team, Jose Calderon team, those guys, they get together as soon as we fly into town. He loves those guys. He loves playing with those guys. And I always remember him saying, you know, I want to develop that same type of mentality here in Minnesota. I want our guys to be together, and I want us to have the same kind of success that we did as a national team. And, you know, unfortunately, that never kind of developed. And I don't know that it can develop on the same level because of the money involved, because of the individual interests that players have. I think that kind of disappointed him a little bit, that never really developed. But, you know, just having that mentality, I think, was just was different. And I really liked it. I liked the idea of it. Unfortunately, it just never came to fruition.
How special is the passing?
You know, those first couple of years, even when he came back from the ACL, I learned early on that, you know, I used to keep my boards flat on the table. And so when someone would score, the other team, I would look down looking for a note or something, a trend or whatever. And I'd look up and I'd miss something because Ricky had taken the inbound and flew up the floor or made some spectacular pass. And I missed it. And so I quickly, after a couple of weeks, realized I had to prop my boards up so that I could keep my head up and still keep an eye on the floor, because anytime Ricky had the ball in his hands, you never knew what he was going to do. And what's really been interesting, and I don't know if this is because of a change in playing style. I mean, let's remember too, next year when he suits up for Utah, that'll be his fifth head coach in 5 years.
Right, and
he's
one of
to relearn.
And one of them was Sam Mitchell, so that you should get dog years for NBA life for that.
and for a point guard, that's even tougher because not only do you have to know your job, but you're the coach on the floor. You got to know everybody else's job too. And I think that's why it took so long for him to figure out, maybe not even a long time, but a half year under Thibodeau, what he wanted to do and how he wanted them to run the offense. But what's interesting is the flashy passes, which were so common those first 3 years, I really feel like maybe I've become more accustomed to them, but I really feel like they haven't been there haven't been as many of them the last couple of years. And I don't know what the reason is for that. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's the system. I don't know if it's an adjusting to every system that he's been under, whether it was Adelman, whether it was Flip Saunders or Sam Mitchell and now Tom Thibodeau. But, when he's on, he's just incredibly special. I just don't think there are a lot of guys like him. I think he's one of the very few that can see the floor the way he does.
Pick and roll with Rudy Gobert. How special could that be?
Well, that could be fantastic. But, part of the issue is we talked about, when he does drive, you now can, because he's not a good finisher at the rim, you can afford to play the pass. I mean, he wants to pass first. And if you're going to, we see it all the time where people just don't even respect his shot enough to go over the screen. They go under. So I think we've seen less pick and roll through the years as teams have basically, allowed him to shoot because we got to worry about Towns. We got to worry about Wiggins. We got to worry about Levine. Hey, if someone's going to beat us, let's let Ricky beat us. And so while he has had some big nights, more times than not, he's been missing those shots. But if he could somehow get that defender to respect him and stick with him, I mean, boy, he can set up Rudy Gobert a million different ways. Do you see Rudy Gobert's tweet tonight, by the way, about one of our bloggers said that, the Spanish, the Spain-France rivalry said that Ricky does really, 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 really doesn't like Gobert, dating back to a couple of tweets from, I think it was some EuroLeague game, not a EuroLeague, what's the European competition
right.
they
yeah,
do?
The
not
Cup.
EuroLeague,
yeah,
but
yeah. It's the Euro Cup.
And so I think Ricky had sent out a tweet about Gobert complaining about a foul call. Or, I don't know, something like that.
Right.
But Gobert said, delete your account now. And it just, that's just great. So I think those two will get along well. Somehow that happens when you're on the same team and you have some common interests.
And what's he like in the locker room?
No, I think he's fantastic. I mean, like I said, he's a team first guy. I just don't think there's any ego about him. I think he's one that wants to bring people together. And so if the rest of the guys are up for that, I think he's a perfect locker room guy.
Alan, thank you for the breakdown. And feel free to send me all your Ricky Rubio notes since you're the only announcer that has more preparation than I do. I'll take all of them.
That's right. You and I will be the only two of broadcast Ricky Rubio games. That's he's a treat. And I think he's going to be missed here. But obviously it's, I think most of the fans here in Minnesota, like I said, are just happy that something finally happened. Cause I think he's already said, a couple of trade deadlines ago that he already feels like he's been traded. That's how much, this has kind of weighed on him. So hopefully, he's able to shed that off his back and really get on with his career. And, I think I know I wish him nothing but the best.
It's interesting you bring that up. I'm not a big believer in that stuff. Like I'm not a big believer in Minnesota, he's drafted instead of Steph, right? He's part of the whole David Kahn picks. Some people thought he's the reason Kevin Love didn't get his full extension, so he's responsible for that. I think his mom passed this year, and that was very hard on him. It does seem as though there's just been this fresh start of an arena where fans love him. No offense to Minnesota fans, but Jazz fans seem to be more engaged, maybe not now with the team you guys have built. I wonder, does that add a level to him? I'm not sure.
I would say with him, from what I know about him, I would say that he cares. He cares about the team. He cares about the game. And I think that stuff does weigh on him. Obviously, the death of his mom and everything, that's a whole other category. But I just get the sense that if there's one guy that I've been around with the Timberwolves that cares the most, it's him. And so I guess if he feels like this has been a weight and it's kind of dragged him down and he's tired of it, I think you really could be the essence of a fresh start. It could be the definition of that.
Alan, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
David, you got it.
So Alan Horton lays out Ricky Rubio. Let's look at it from a Jazz perspective now. First off, they got their point guard before the meeting with Gordon Hayward. That had to happen. It's a point guard that plays a team game that matches the style of who Quinn Snyder is, what Gordon Hayward likes. It didn't have them going to free agency wondering what might happen with George Hill, or frankly, what was the next choice? Were the Jazz going to try to go get Jeff Teague, who will sign with Minnesota tonight? Were they trying to get, and is that somebody that I'm not a huge fan of, frankly? So I'll tell you what, there's the first thing that happened is the Jazz used their cap room. Second thing is they got themselves a point guard, and a point guard that players like to play with. I think that's really, really important for where the Jazz are. The other one is that the Jazz gave away an Oklahoma City pick that, as we were recording this, has gotten less good as Paul George is headed to Oklahoma City. And moreover, the Jazz have been able to make all these trades to go get Donovan Mitchell, to move up in the draft for Bradley, to go get their point guard without having to cost them Rodney Hood, without costing them Derek Favors, and without costing them Boris Diaw's expiring contract. So there are more moves that the Jazz can certainly make. Finally, Ricky Rubio comes in at $14 million a year. The difference between that and the six that George Hill could have signed in his extension is significant with the numbers that are floating around about Joe Ingles. The Jazz are likely going to finish free agency in the luxury tax. Then you can get under it before February, the trade deadline of next year. And if you get it under the trade debt before the end of the trade deadline, well, then you are able, you don't have to pay the tax. But the Jazz are likely to end up over the tax by the time they match whatever deal Joe Ingles gets, or they sign Joe Ingles and hopefully get Gordon Hayward back. At that point, they have to move one contract to be able to get back under the tax at some point, whether it's a Derek Favors or an Alec Burks or something of that sort. And so, really, the this just has so many ripples. One, they used the cap room, and this was the final day to get it done. Dennis Lindsay just remarkably putting things together, getting things to work. And when it's not just in a vacuum, that's what's most remarkable about what he's accomplished. The second one here that jumps out to me is that they have a point guard, and a good one, and a really good one. Not a great shooter, but a great point guard. 9 assists a game, team play. Floor spacing is going to be a little interesting, but can they get him, can they get him so that he can shoot a little bit better? It's tough to defy the numbers he's had in his career, but how can Quinn's system with the movement keep him valuable? And what does that do for somebody like Joe Ingles if he returns, who no longer has to create for the offense? I mean, he basically was our best creator. We finally actually have a point guard that creates and gives opportunities and can probably pick up our tempo a great deal in that. So lots of pieces here for the Jazz, all of them necessary. And here you now have Ricky Rubio as your point guard. And frankly, if Gordon Hayward decides to go and play somewhere else, the Jazz have done pretty much what they could and put it together as they best could. So that is your quick Ricky Rubio bonus podcast for Locked On Jazz. Thanks to Alan Horton, and we'll come back and keep updating you as the week goes on, or weekend goes on over 4th of July with more information. This has been a special Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.